Welcome to New World Notes. I am Kenneth Doust. Today we'll hear parts of a great talk about nuclear power that Dr. Helen Caldicott gave in Brattleboro, Vermont this past April. Brattleboro is just a few miles from the aging Vermont Yankee nuclear power plant. In parts of her hour-long talk that we'll hear some other time, Caldicott explains how the early stages of the nuclear energy process, mining uranium and then enriching it, burned so much fossil fuel that nuclear power pollutes the air with hydrocarbons as much as any other means of generating electricity. Plus, it adds the reality of radioactive contamination of the earth and the real danger of nuclear explosion. Today she'll focus on that plus as she discusses the nuclear reactor itself, which kills people with radioactive pollution even when it's operating normally. And she advises the people of Brattleboro that the best way to end this ongoing horror is to get naked. She explains this better than I can. Here's Helen Caldicott.
Okay, so the reactor. I'm doing 1,000 megawatt. Yours is a bit smaller. They pack 100 tons of uranium rods encased in zircon, which actually catches fire if the rods get too hot. This is immersed in water. They pull the control rods out of boron. The whole thing reaches critical mass. Atoms start breaking apart in a random fashion, producing 200 new radioactive elements that didn't exist before man fissioned uranium. This is the energy released is E equals mc squared, the sort of energy released inside the sun. Enormous, and this becomes 1 billion times more radioactive, and it contains as much long-lived radiation as that released by 1,000 Hiroshima-sized bombs. So you're living next to a bomb plant, only 1,000 Hiroshima bombs. It's a bit less because your plant's a bit smaller. I know 650, but you're living next to a bomb factory. They were designed to be bomb factories. Now, the heat emitted boils the water. The water's taken off, turns a generator, which generates electricity. All a nuclear power plant is designed to do, therefore, is to boil water. There are other ways to boil water. This is the most dangerous way to boil water that man could ever devise. It uses up to 1 million gallons of water a minute to keep it cool from the Kinetic River, which goes back relatively radioactive, containing carbon-14, whose half-life is 114,000 years. Carbon is present in every cell of our body, and tritium is routinely released. The only thing that stops tritium escaping is gold, as nuclear power plants are not made of gold, and they make a hell of a lot of tritium. It goes out into the Connecticut River. This one's half-life is 12.4 years. Multiply the half-life by 20 to get its total radiological life. And these elements bioconcentrate in the food by orders of magnitude in the algae, the crustaceans, the little fish and the big fish, called bioconcentration. So therefore, and you can't smell, taste or see any of these isotopes. Or also through that stack, there's a high stack, tritium is routinely released. It combines with oxygen to form tritiated water. There's a huge literature in the Journal of Health Physics on tritium. They're scared stiff of the stuff. It's a soft beta, doesn't emit any gamma, and all the energy is transmitted to the tissues. It doesn't get out because it's very soft. And this tritiated water is absorbed through the skin. The skin lets nothing through, the most important organ of our body. But tritium enters the skin very readily. So if you're immersed in a fog because it's an inversion system near the plant, you're going to be absorbing tritium. The trees absorb tritium, and at night the dew drips down with tritium in them, in the dew. Tritium combines with the DNA molecule, gets into every cell. It causes brain tumours, abnormalities of fetuses, and all sorts of cancers all over the body. Other elements escape too, called argon, krypton and xenon. They're noble gases. They don't combine in the body except they're fat soluble, and they tend to go to the fatty deposits here in the abdomen and upper thighs where the testicles and ovaries are located. They're very, very high energy gamma emitters and can, as such, mutate genes in the eggs and sperm. If the wind's blowing this way and there's an inversion system, you're being exposed to. These are called routine emissions. It's all fine by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which is paid for by the nuclear industry. You don't have an independent body to monitor your health or to monitor these people at this reactor. This is a major health problem. There's just been a study in Germany done by Dr. Eisenberg who has found that there's a much higher than normal incidence of cancer around the older reactors. Why? Because it takes a long time to get the cancer. You have to take that whole exposed population, follow them till they die and do autopsies on all of them to get the correct diagnosis, because often we're lazy when we write death certificates, and compare them to a non-exposed population. Pilgrim's been studied in Massachusetts. They have a higher incidence of cancer, and we're going to see more and more. Now, if there's a meltdown, how would we have a meltdown? Well, it's easy. I could produce a meltdown easily. Reactors are dependent upon external electricity supply to supply the pumps for the cooling water. If that's cut off during a storm or whatever, and they lose the coolant, within 2 hours it melts down. In Sweden last year, they got to several minutes of a Chernobyl-style meltdown because they lost their external supply. They all have emergency generators to start up. They couldn't get two of the generators. They're sort of old and they don't practice them very often. They couldn't get two of them started, and just at the last moment, they got one started. They closed down 5 of the 10 reactors in Sweden, yet they want to build more because, don't you know, this is the answer to global warming. You know, I could train to be an operator and I could go into the operating room and I might be a bit psychotic, and there are a lot of psychotic people around because Reagan emptied out the mental hospitals and they sleep in the streets and stuff and they're not cared for or medicated, and I could flip the wrong switch and you'd have a meltdown. As reactors get old, and this is one of the oldest in the country, the pipes become embrittled, like human beings' pipes. So there's a thing called a bathtub curve, and it applies to human beings and nuclear reactors. In the first few years of life, children are vulnerable to diseases and infections and meningitis and the like, even though we immunise them. During early adulthood and midlife, you're pretty stable most of the time. And when you get older, your pipes start clagging up, like my pipes are clagging up. And when you get old, you know, all sorts of things start happening, and you look at your body and think, oh my God, I look like the old patients I used to treat. Well, it's the same with reactors. Chernobyl, in the first few months, they're very vulnerable to accidents as things sort of settle down. Chernobyl and Three Mile Island both occurred in the first few months of life, and now your reactor's here. Its pipes are cracking and falling apart. I'll show you this in a minute. And they want to extend its life, as you know, for another 20 years, which is really wicked. And also, they're pumping out the power output. They've got enriched uranium up to 3.5%, because, you see, the cost of a reactor is in the initial building the reactor. And then energy takes over, and they just sell you electricity at high cost, and they encourage you to use as much as you possibly can, so they make more money. And they push up the power output because they'll make more money. But when the power output goes up, the thing starts vibrating. And the pipes themselves are fragile and they'll fall apart. So what they're doing is in fact precipitating maybe a meltdown at Vermont Yankee. I'm wondering how you can close it down. I'll tell you what, I mean, you can think of mad things that are benign. But once Patch Adams, the Dr. Clown, and I led a naked march down Van Ness in San Francisco, because it was just getting to Y2K and, you know, we could have had a nuclear war. In fact, I was in the White House talking to the Pentagon by conference call, and they said, don't worry, we've got it all worked out. In fact, the Pentagon lost their computers, their early warning computers, to start a nuclear war for 8 months over the rollover. We could have had meltdowns at the reactors and the like. And I was at this big conference, Gorbachev was there with Patch, who was in another room, Gorbachev. And, you know, we were really worried, and the press was bored stiff. It's like, why cover this? You know, this is boring, until there's a meltdown. And then so Patchcock went to the microphone and said, I've been telling Helen since July we need to take our clothes off and walk across America. And I thought, oh, Patch. So I went to the mic and I said, he'll take their clothes off, and half the audience put their hands up. And one woman said, I'll ring the media. So she rang the media. They were there in a flash. Isn't it interesting what turns them on? So we went out into this sort of beautiful red carpeted foyer, and I thought, oh, well. So I got my gear off. I left my scarf on to cover the naughty bits, and I wore my pearls. Patch just stripped naked, as did 50 other people. And you know what? The human body is beautiful. Fat ones, skinny ones, tall ones, really beautiful. And it's so vulnerable to what I'm talking about, you know, to a nuclear attack or whatever. I didn't know what to do, so I thought, oh, well, we'll go out on the street. So we started walking down Van Ness. It was at night, it was cold. And someone started chanting, nudes, not nukes. Nudes, not nukes. And guys were driving along and they went, pulled up and got out and started clapping. They didn't know why we were there. People in the bus are tired going home and suddenly their eyes fell out. We got down to the corner and I thought, I don't want to go in a paddy wagon to an American jail stark naked. So we came back, but I've never seen such courageous, excited people. No one put their clothes on. Everyone's standing around little knots talking. I'm on the cell phone talking to ABC News, stark naked. It was very pure. And I mean, it just suddenly flashed into my brain. You know, you could all go down there, the whole of Brattleboro. And don't tell me you wouldn't get the whole of the national press, let alone the international press. You would. Nudes, not nukes. And it's medical. You know, you'll have your doctors there. They can wear white coats, you know, and have a stethoscope. But I tell you what, you would focus national attention. The New York Times would be there in a flash. Matthew Wald and Fox News and everyone. You would hit the international headlines, and by God, it might work. Might give the governor a hell of a shock. Hands up those who'll do it. I'll come and join you. Yeah, it's cold in January, isn't it? No, don't wait till January. Do it before it, on a nice, warm fall day, Indian summer, do it then. You've got to do it soon. Soon. Randy, you'll do it, won't you? Yeah, right.
We've been listening to famed anti-nuclear activist Helen Caldicott, MD, speaking in Brattleboro, Vermont this April about the necessity of shutting down the old and rapidly aging nuclear power plant, Vermont Yankee. In our excerpts today, Caldicott focuses on the reactor itself, which she calls a bomb factory. She shows how nuclear reactors routinely kill people in normal operation, and really kill them off when they malfunction. The first part ended with her suggesting that the citizens of Brattleboro copy those of San Francisco and have a naked march demanding that Vermont Yankee be shut down. And I can't think of a better way to get to know your neighbors a little better. Coming up, she'll talk about clogged pipes, radioactive contamination of the Connecticut River. Are you listening, Hartford? We're downstream from that bomb factory. And she'll read a very convincing scenario about what will happen when a reactor melts down. Specifically, the Indian Point reactor, our friendly neighbor to the west, just 24 miles north of New York City. And near the top of everybody's most likely to blow list. Here's a footnote by me. Vermont Yankee has been in commercial operation for 37 years. Its license calls for it to be shut down at age 40. Its owner and operator, Entergy, has applied for an extension to run the thing until it's 60 years old. By way of contrast, a nearly identical reactor, Connecticut's Millstone Unit 1, was shut down at age 25. Not 60, 25. In August 2007, part of a cooling tower at Vermont Yankee collapsed due to corrosion, rotting lumber from its carbon steel bolts, and dry rot in its beams. Afterwards, Entergy promised to do a better job of inspecting the plant in the future. Before Caldicott returns, let's hear a few words of comfort from Tom Lehrer. Technically, he's singing about nuclear bombs dropped from the sky, not stationary, land-based bombs, like Vermont Yankee, Indian Point, and Connecticut's aptly named Millstone. But the effects are similar.
When you attend a funeral, it is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all go together when we go. All suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. We will all fry together when we fry. We'll be French fried potatoes by and by. There will be no more misery when the world is our rotisserie. Yes, we all will fry together when we fry. Down by the old maelstrom, there'll be a storm before the calm, and we will all bake together when we bake. There'll be nobody present at the wake, with complete participation in that grand incineration, nearly 3 billion hunks of well-done steak. Oh, we will all char together when we char, and let there be no moaning of the bar. Just sing out a Te Deum when you see that ICBM, and the party will be come as you are. We will all burn together when we burn. There'll be no need to stand and wait your turn. When it's time for the fallout and St. Peter calls us all out, we'll just drop our agendas and adjourn. You will all go directly to your respective Valhallas. Go directly, do not pass, go, do not collect $200. And we will all go together when we go. Every Hottentot and every Eskimo, when the air becomes Uranus, we will all go simultaneous. Yes, we all will go together when we all go together. Yes, we all will go together when we go.
Okay, now, what else do I have to say? As the neutrons irradiate the core and the metal, the iron and the nickel and everything, they become radioactive, very potently radioactive, dangerous. Radioactive iron, radioactive nickel, what's the other one? Radioactive cobalt, 60. And they give out huge amounts of radiation, and they're dangerous for the poor workers going in there. You know, they often use workers in very high radiation areas, and they're called sponges, these poor kids. And they have a badge, and they can spend like 3 seconds before they get their yearly dose of radiation. And these kids tend to go to other reactors because they get paid a fair bit, you know. And it's called CRUD. I love that. And CRUD stands for Chalk River Unidentified Deposits. Well, they clean the pipes out from the CRUD. We can't clean my crud out, but they can clean this crud out. And they take it along maybe to Savannah River, and they sometimes flush it into the Connecticut River. They also discharge often unreported amounts of radiation both into the air and water quite frequently. This is not an uncommon occurrence. Decommissioning is going to cost probably up to $5 billion. to produce. You have to let the thing cool down for decades because it's so radioactive. And then it gets cut apart by remote control using robots. More fossil fuel, more CO2. A nuclear power plant now, according to Standard & Poor's, will cost $12 to $15 billion to build. Who's going to pay for it? Yeah, you suckers. This is a socialised industry, like the Pentagon is really a communist organisation, because you pay for it. Whereas your medical care, that's a capitalist system, isn't it? The whole thing's crazy. In Australia, we've got free medical care. Go to the doctor, get your diagnosis, get your medicines. I get a lot of tablets. I pay about $5 a month because it's all subsidised. And then you go next door and the government puts the money in the palm of your hand. That's why you pay taxes, to be cared for. Are you funny, you Americans? You sit there going... Whereas in Australia, they'd be going, God almighty, you know, and they'd get mad and march out and start doing something. Meltdown. I'm going to read you a passage from the book. You're not allowed to leave the building unless you have a copy of the book, because I'm going to lock the door. Okay. Now, this meltdown, the scenario was described by the Union of Concerned Scientists, and it's actually Indian Point, 35 miles from Manhattan. I was outside Indian Point the other day in Bobby Kennedy's boat, and if I'd been a Timothy McVeigh psychotic and had a little boat loaded with fertiliser, I could have driven it into the cooling pipes, two of which transmit 2 million gallons a minute into the reactors. And so this is the scene if there was a meltdown at Indian Point. While Indian Point nuclear power plants operate at full tilt in a country that insists on car seats and safety belts, no smoking, no swimming without a lifeguard, fire extinguishers, oxygen masks, life vests and airbags, citizens lack the most basic information about how to protect themselves and their children in the event of a nuclear meltdown. Nor is there any official requirement to supply this information to the general population. Imagine this scene, over 300,000 people, and of course you don't have that here, but extrapolate down, are running and driving away from the stricken reactor. You can't evacuate. By the time you know it's happened, the clouds already contaminated you. Evacuation plans, they're just a red herring. Stuck at traffic lights and traffic jams, all are in a state of panic, anxiety and acute disarray, trying to reach their children at schools, their spouses and their mates, desperate. Then they begin to taste a strange metallic flavour in their mouths, which they tasted at Chernobyl and Three Mile Island. They infer that each breath exposes them to deadly radioactive gases. The radio blasts out dire warnings. Nobody knows what they're doing and nobody's in control. What about Manhattan? Millions of people trapped as the bridges in the Midtown Lincoln and Holland tunnels are totally blocked, hiding in their apartments, hardly daring to breathe. If everyone took inert potassium iodide tablets, which should be in every medicine cabinet in Massachusetts, Connecticut, New Hampshire and Vermont, as soon as they heard about the meltdown, peak doses to the thyroids of radioactive iodine could be reduced by 30%, but of course none of the other isotopes would be affected. It should therefore be mandatory that every person living within 50 miles of Indian Point stop potassium iodide. Yet the NRC requires that potassium iodide tablets be available only for a 10-mile radius, stipulating that recommended consideration of potassium iodide distribution out to 10 miles was adequate for the protection of the public health and safety. Compared to adults, children receive three times the thyroid dose because their little thyroids really suck this stuff in from I131 because they have a higher respiratory rate and their thyroid is relatively small. And then many would die of acute radiation illness. Hands up those who've read On the Beach by Neville Shute. Yes, it's about a nuclear war that occurs by accident in the Northern Hemisphere, which could happen today because the weapons, nothing's changed since the Cold War. The weapons are on hair trigger alert, ready to go, and that'll be the end of life on Earth. Everyone died except people in Melbourne, which is where I lived, and I was 15. Gradually, the radiation came down, and people started getting severe nausea, bloody diarrhea, their hair was falling out, vomiting, and the government dispensed cyanide capsules so that people could kill their babies immediately and they didn't have to die in such distress. And at the end of the book, everyone's dead in Melbourne, and that's the end of the human race. The beautiful, elegant streets are still there, the trams are there, bits of paper blowing down in the breeze, a blind gently flapping. And that marked my soul, and I was 15. That's why I do this work as a doctor. So many hundreds of thousands would die of acute radiation illness within 2 weeks. And then many hundreds and thousands more would get cancer, up to 500,000 or 750,000 people in Manhattan. So that's a meltdown. Now I want to show you a couple of slides. I'm not going to go into reprocessing a Generation 4 reactor. Suffice it to say, Generation 4 reactors are fueled with 5 to 15 tons of plutonium. So we lose the coolant, there's a meltdown, but not just that, there'll be a massive nuclear explosion that could be seen from Mars with 15 tons of plutonium, and that material scattered to the four winds. The most satanic thing I've ever read about in medicine. But the physicists are very excited about it because they don't know any medicine. There's a huge literature on radiation and cancer. Huge. And just to end, doctors really know about this because at Three Mile Island, the doctors fled with their families and left their patients in the hospitals to care for themselves. So you've got one task ahead of you. I don't feel like coming back unless you've done it. I'm going to watch.
Remember, nudes, not nukes. Not as inspiring as Make Love, Not War, but it beats the status quo. Internet porn may make a dubious contribution to our cultural environment, but Frisky Cheerleaders has killed a lot fewer people than general public utilities did at Three Mile Island, or Energy is doing in Vermont. Tom Lehrer's song, We Will All Go Together When We Go, celebrates its 50th birthday this year. Yes, it's even older than Vermont Yankee, though it's held up a lot better, apart from some antiquated terminology like ICBM.
Just sing out a tedium when you see that ICBM, and the party will be come as you are. We will all burn...
ICBM is Intercontinental Ballistic Missile, a familiar abbreviation in the 50s and 60s. Thank you for listening. New World Notes is produced in the spacious underground studios of WWUH-FM, a community service of the University of Hartford. For the Brattleboro recording, our thanks to Helen Caldicott and her weekly radio program, If You Love This Planet. New World Notes is available off the air by internet stream, podcast, or MP3 download at your convenience. There's an archive of shows you can download or listen to online. There's also a weekly newsletter. All is free. For more information, pretty pictures, an archive of our past shows, and some great links, see our webpage. We're at http://newworldnotes.blogspot.com. You can email your comments to me at kdowst, that's KDOWST, at hotmail.com. The opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily represent the views of anyone connected with this station. From Darkest New England, this is Kenneth Doust, wishing you a good week and advising, illegit to my non-carborundum, keep the faith, and please tune in again.
And we will all go together when we go. Every Hottentot and every Eskimo. When the air becomes Uranus, we will all go simultaneous. Yes, we all will go together when we all go together. Yes, we all will go together when we go.